WA podcast from William Hill. Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Yeah, welcome along to the FWA podcast from William Hill. My name's Lee Phelps. Every week we talk to the best football writers in the business, and this week's no exception. We've got Jason Burton, who's a football correspondent with the Sunday Telegraph. Morning, Jason. You well?
Good morning, yes, I'm fine, thank you.
Excellent. We're going to have a look back at the Champions League midweek and pick up the pieces from that, maybe see how that's changed the odds. We're going to have a little look forward to the Premier League, and we'll get Jason's thoughts on his Premier League Player of the Year, the PFA Player of the Year, different to the journalists' version, but often can be the same, and it probably will be this year as well. The midweek Champions League action, first of all, no wins for either English club, but a decent performance, probably a morale-boosting performance from Manchester United. Jason, you were there. The atmosphere was sensational. And, you know, I've given Manchester United a lot of chances this year in terms of thinking they're going to do it this time. They're going to do it this time. Well, they didn't quite deliver, but they at least showed some spark and some kind of togetherness and some a united front, if you like.
Yeah, there was definitely a defiance about the performance. And it's interesting because in some ways it's almost an indictment of how far they've fallen this season, that a draw at home, got a scoring draw at home to Bayern Munich, is almost celebrated as a victory. And there was a sense of relief, I think, around Old Trafford that they weren't humiliated. I think that was the real fear, was that, you know, Bayern would come and win, you know, 2-3-4 goals to nil, and that would really have ended the whole tie. And I think the big thing for David Moyes, the big sort of bonus for him, is keeping the tie alive and then go back to Munich next week with a real chance. And I do think they have a chance. I think that people are assuming that Bayern Munich will just roll them over next week. And they haven't beaten the last four English clubs to go to Munich. I mean, Arsenal have done well there, obviously, with the draw, even though they went out. But they won there the year before. Manchester City won there. And obviously, going back to the Champions League final, Chelsea won on penalties. So there is real hope for Manchester United that if they keep that discipline and that team shape and that defiance and frustrate Bayern Munich. And I think the key player for all of this tie, is Danny Welbeck, because he gives that pace, that athleticism and that outlet to Manchester United that worries Bayern Munich. And, you know, if he can stay fit and if he's available for next week, I do give them a chance. It's not obviously a great chance because Bayern Munich are the best team in Europe, but the best team doesn't always win.
No, very true. I was going to come on to that. It's amazing when you look at the home form from Bayern Munich. The website that I've got up here, a minute, the green signifies a win, yellow is a draw, and red, maybe kind of a pinky red, is a loss. You're going back to kind of, you know, the last season, the only two losses there are Arsenal 2-0 and Manchester City 3-2. Go back before that, Bayer Leverkusen beat them at home, Napoli in a friendly, Chelsea, of course, in that that Champions League match when they won on penalties, which not you know, it's not at their home ground, obviously. And even going back a bit further, you know, there's some decent results for English clubs.
Got a good result there, yeah. A few years ago.
And Arsenal getting the draw, of course, the 1-1 draw, so we didn't lose that. Interesting. Yeah, I think, in a sense, if Manchester United can replicate what they did at Old Trafford, it's easier to do it away from home than it is at home, in a sense, because at least you haven't got the crowd kind of urging you forward. And that, like you say, that one early goal with the away goal rule, and Bayern could start to get nervous.
I'm not even sure they need an early goal. No, okay. I really don't think it's. I think it's just a question of keeping the game alive, keeping the contest as tight as possible, as long as possible. I mean, even if you go into, say, the 80th minute and it's 0-0, well, then obviously Manchester United have to go for it a bit more, but they're still in it. Mm. And I think David Moyes' whole aim in this tie is to stay in the tie, to keep the tie as long as possible, for as long as possible, so that they give themselves that chance. I mean, you know, I think they expect to go out. I mean, let's be frank. They went into that tie thinking, as I said before, you know, they don't want to be humiliated because that would be terrible for them. And they've won back a little bit of pride. There is obviously still, you're looking at it and thinking, this isn't really the Manchester United way. And on Tuesday night, it felt almost like, you know, this was like a tie at Goodison Park and in Moyes' sort of heyday at Everton rather than at Manchester United under Alex Ferguson. But that's just an indictment of where they're at the moment. But I think if they keep it alive and keep it tight and keep it as long as possible next week, it just gives them every chance. I think the worst thing would be if they obviously go behind early or if they try and go too gung-ho and get picked off by Bayern Munich. And there is another factor which is quite interesting on all of this, is Pep Guardiola. And you sense his frustration at playing English teams. It's quite interesting. He clearly doesn't like playing English teams. I can sense that with him. I think he feels you know, there is a defensive element to English football with obviously doggedness about them. And I think that when he went out in the Champions League to Chelsea, that extraordinary campaign that Chelsea went on to win the Champions League, I think that scarred him somewhat, really, because it was so improbable and so almost irrational the way they went out to Chelsea. He must be in the back of his mind thinking, oh no, not a rerun of that again. And there is that sort of slight rerun of that happening with this tie. I'm probably getting a bit too carried away. I think Bayern Munich will probably win comfortably in the end. But, you know, I think Manchester United do have a chance.
Yeah, and I think also beneficial, the fact that it's such a quick turnaround in games, you can keep that kind of that mentality in the mind. It's interesting, I mentioned this already on the FWA podcast a few weeks back. I was interviewing Martin Keown a little while ago and talking to him about Manchester United. And he said, when you've been a champion and you're no longer going to be champions, you know you cannot be champions again, I.e. talking about the Premier League.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to finish second because runners-up doesn't really cut it for you. And he said way back before before we got to this stage of the Champions League, don't be surprised if they perform better than at any other point in the season in the Champions League, because they can still be champions of that. They've still got something to cling to, which I thought was interesting. Didn't really apply to the FA Cup and the League Cup because they also went out of that as well.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting perspective on it from someone who's been there and done it.
I would share that, to be honest with you. I think that's right. Because, again, going back to Chelsea, when they won the Champions League, something similar happened there. Because, obviously, if you remember, they actually finished outside the top four that season. Ultimately, it actually cost Di Matteo his job because his task wasn't to win the Champions League that year. It was to get into the top four. And he went on and won he obviously won the FA Cup as well. But I think you're right. I think this Champions League campaign, you know, it's not exactly, well, it can save Manchester United's season. It can absolutely save their season. But at least it can keep their season alive for as long as possible. I mean, the big fear was to get smashed by Bayern Munich on Tuesday, and then suddenly it's over and that's it. And then the absolute sort of browbeating and the sort of inquest would have carried on for the rest of the season. And it'd been a horrible end to the campaign for Manchester United. You know, it really would have been. But at least there's something there now to cling on to. And they've got to go for it. What will be interesting will be what sort of team David Moyes now puts out at the weekend. Does he even sort of think, right, OK, I'm actually going to rest quite a few here because of the Champions League? I think he will. I think he will rest a lot of players for Newcastle at the weekend. And that in itself will be interesting because, you know, they could still finish, you know, sixth. Obviously catch Tottenham Hotspur. I don't think they'll catch Everton or Arsenal. But, you know, they could still finish. And finish higher up at the table as possible is important to them. But I think he can be forgiven for resting some players against Newcastle and going for it for next week in the Champions League.
Yeah, could be. On the same night, there was a great game between Atletico Madrid and Barcelona, which finished 1-1 as well, of course. It was at Barcelona, the return leg at Atletico, which is an intriguing one. Similarly, the Real Madrid-Borussia Dortmund game was very good for different reasons. But Chelsea losing 3-1 at 2-1, it kind of reminded me of those games in the group stages where English teams let late goals slip and it really cost them heavily. I'm thinking of Arsenal. 3-1's a bit of a mountain to climb. The away goal obviously is crucial. You know, a 2-0 win would do it, and you know, maybe Chelsea are capable. But when you look at that front two, as it will be now, because it doesn't look like Ibrahimovic will be fit to play. You look at Cavani and especially Vatsi, who loves playing Chelsea. Hard to see PSG not scoring at Stamford Bridge, isn't it?
Yeah, it is hard to see them not scoring, and I think you're absolutely right. In some ways, actually, ironically, and I'm a massive fan of Zlatan Ibrahimovic, I think he is really one of the top players in the world. But him being injured may even work in PSG's favour, because they can unleash the pace. I mean, if you look at last night when they played Chelsea, Lucas Moura coming on made a big difference because he's got that pace, you know, and obviously Javier Pastore came on and scored. But suddenly when Moura came on the pitch, it changed things quite a lot, and Chelsea were on the back foot. And the one thing with that Chelsea defence, as strong as it is, they don't like pace. You know, neither Cahill nor Terry, or Terry in particular, can deal with outright pace. And if Chelsea are pushing next week, which they'll have to do at some stage because they've got two goals to find, then they are vulnerable to being caught on the break with Cavani and Lavezzi so quick. Obviously, those two played in the Napoli team that Chelsea beat, you know, having lost the first leg 3-1 a couple of years ago. So that will be in their minds as well. It's definitely doable for Chelsea, but there is a real problem there in terms of the strikers. It really is a problem. And I just wonder about Mourinho's tactics, not just in terms of the teams he's playing, but the way he's talking about his strikers.
Yeah, it is strange,
how can
isn't
he possibly be helping the confidence of Fernando Torres to basically ridicule him now? You know, he's talking about, I haven't got, you know, a striker, a serviceable striker. I mean, Demba Ba is so out of the pitch. Obviously, Samuel Eto'o is older and so on. Lukaku out on loan. But Torres, I mean, clearly it's coming to an end for him now at Chelsea. It's been a horrible, horrible career in many ways at the club. But he'll turn around when he leaves and think, I won the Champions League and I won the Europa League. But it's just not worked for him. And it's become embarrassing. And I think Mourinho's frustration is clear. It's absolutely clear now. He's been simmering for a while. We've heard privately about how unhappy he is with his strikers and so on. The only thing I would say is Chelsea have spent an awful lot of money. And, you know, you look at something, for example, signing Willian last summer for 30 million. OK, absolutely fantastic player. Probably Chelsea's best player against PSG. But was he really the player they needed? You know, everyone knew there was a problem with the strikers. Now, Mourinho will turn around and say, I couldn't get the strikers I wanted. Fair enough. But you still got to manage your squad. And I think to ridicule, which is what he is doing, some of those players he's got available to him, it can't be helping them. Maybe it's a motivational tool. My knowledge of Fernando Torres is he doesn't like that sort of thing. Mm. He's a player who reacts to an arm around his shoulder and a little bit of love. And look what Rafa Benitez got out of him last season. That was his best period as a Chelsea player because Benitez put his arm around him. Mourinho's not going to do that. I think he's not going to do that with Torres. I think he's given up on Fernando Torres. I think he's trying his best now to get Torres out the door.
Yeah, it will be interesting. It's almost like you get the sense that, and he said it a few times, so it's not a big surprise, that this season is it's a settling in season for Mourinho. He said it, hasn't he?
You have a settling in season.
He's told us that, though, hasn't he?
A club like Chelsea. Yeah. He's done brilliantly convincing people it's a settling
yeah.
in season.
He doesn't seem to care what happens, though, does he? He doesn't seem to care if he upsets his players. He obviously knows he's going to get some more in anyway.
No, exactly. And I think, clearly, when the way he talks, you must think he's had reassurances from the club that, yeah. as you say, it is effectively a settling in season, a transitional season, a season of change. He's done brilliantly at convincing the world that he's got this young team, which is just not true, frankly. He's got two very, very good world-class young players in Eden Hazard and Oscar. The rest of the team isn't particularly young. Schürrle, yes, okay, fine. The rest of the team is not particularly young. He's convinced people that he's not spent money and that some way Manchester City has spent an awful lot more than Chelsea. That's just not true either. You know, and if you look at the average age of the squads, they're pretty similar. But he's done brilliantly convincing people all of that, you know. But you look at the squad, and there is clearly areas of the team which need improving drastically. But again, you know, I go back to some of his signings. He bought Nemanja Matic in January, a great player, superb, brilliant for the future for Chelsea. But again, did they need to spend £21 million on a holding midfield in the January window? I'm not sure he did. We're not seeing much of Mohamed Salah, are we? You know, £11 million signing there. They bought Kurt Zouma, a young defender. There were issues in the squad that needed addressed. Now, OK, he'll argue that he's building for the future, and that's all well and good. But as I say, when you're at a club with the stature of Chelsea, the here and now needs to be taken care of as well. And I think that was a hugely damaging defeat last night in terms of, you know, not just in terms of the scoreline, but I just think the way that Chelsea sort of, not capitulated, but they had the initiative in the first half, but they just couldn't press it home. And PSG, a fine team, got some good players, but they're not a great side. And I think Chelsea could have done an awful lot better last night.
Chelsea are 9-4 to qualify after the second leg. They're odds on to win the 90 minutes 5-6, so just over 2-1 to qualify. Manchester United incidentally 5-1 to qualify against Bayern Munich. The prices for the Champions League outright prices, so the eventual winners, Bayern Munich are the 7-4 favourites, so just short of 2-1. Real Madrid 9-4, just over 2-1. Barcelona 11-2, then PSG 8-1, Atletico 12-1, Chelsea 14s, Man United 33-1, and Borussia Dortmund 250-1. At this stage, Jason, who wins the whole thing?
Real Madrid, I think, are the outstanding team left in the competition in terms of just their firepower.
Yeah.
What they're doing really well in the last these knockout rounds now is they're blowing away the opposition in the first game. They're making the safe second game almost irrelevant. It's interesting because obviously they've got a real battle on their hands in La Liga. You know, they look like they're obviously not the favourites to win that title. And even more interestingly, there is the whole question mark over the future of Carlo Ancelotti. I think there's been rumblings about whether or not he'll even be at Real Madrid next season. If he wins the Champions League, yes, he will. But you look at that team, it's so well geared up to competing in this competition with, I say, the firepower they've got up front. It's hard to look beyond them, but you know, as I said before, it's not always the best team that wins. It depends what the draw they get. It massively helps them that, you know, Barcelona and Atletico Madrid are slugging it out between themselves. But I really would be surprised if Real Madrid don't make it to the final, depending on the draw. And then beyond that, clearly Bayern Munich, you know, I would say are the second sort of favourites in my eyes. And after those two, it's hard to think. I mean, obviously Barcelona, you know, would be in there, but I think those two are the outstanding teams.
Yeah, fair enough. William Hill are also betting on how many English teams will be in the semi-finals of the Champions League. If you don't think either Man United or Chelsea will make it through, then 4-9 for zero. One of the two is 13-8, and for both of them to get through, which is unlikely, is 20-1.
60 hours of betting radio, week in, week out. Inplayradio.co.uk. Your eyes on a world of betting.
Before we look at the Premier League weekend, let's take a look at a market that I love. It's a little bit lopsided this year, Jason, now, because it's the PFA Player of the Year. Obviously, there's a few Player of the Year awards, one that you yourself will vote in. This is the one that the players pick. Luis Suarez is a very, very short price favourite. Then you got the likes of Eden Hazard, Yaya Toure, Daniel Sturridge, Steven Gerrard, Wayne Rooney and Vincent Kompany. Luis Suarez can't be caught. You would imagine the same as his for the top scorer of the Premier League. I was just interested to talk to you. I mean, would he be your pick, Jason? Luis Suarez?
Yeah, he would be. I think he would be. I mean, at the start of the season, halfway through the season, I was thinking Aaron Ramsey actually.
Yeah.
Just because of the story.
Seems a long time ago.
the incredible comeback he's made from this horrendous injury, and I saw quite a lot of Arsenal at the start of the season, and he was playing brilliantly. Suarez, obviously, you've got to remember, was banned at the start of the season. You know, he wasn't even playing. And I think that is even, in some ways, an even more astonishing story of somebody rehabilitating himself. Talking to people in football, talking to players in the game, I mean, there is an awe around Luis Suarez. I mean, they're almost fearful of him when they go out there. Yaya Toure has got a little bit of that as well. People are sort of slightly fearful of him when they come out. I mean, I tipped him at the start of the season to be Player of the Year because I thought Manchester City would win the league and do better in the Champions League. But I think Suarez, it has to be. He's in a situation now where he's almost unstoppable. He transforms that Liverpool team whenever he's on the pitch. His play is extraordinary. It's not just in terms of the goals he's scoring. I think the goal he scored against Tottenham last week was a player who is absolutely at his peak. And just knows that he can almost take on teams second-handed. You can see the appetite he has for the game. He wants to play. He talked to Brendan Rodgers. He wants to play every minute of every match, and he wants to score in every minute of every match. And he's driven, absolutely driven, and you can see it in his eyes. And I think he's just striking the fear of God into his opponents. And I'd be very, very surprised if he doesn't win both the PFA Player of the Year and the Football Writers Player of the Year because of what he's done. And I think it's a brilliant story for Liverpool as well and Brendan Rodgers, the way they manage the situation. Got to remember, he was desperate to leave Liverpool last summer. Absolutely desperate. He gave interviews saying he wanted to go. There was the bid from Arsenal, the £40 million and £1 bid. There was the talk of a clause in his contract. There was talk of him being disciplined by the club. There was talk of him having to apologise to the Liverpool squad. I was over in Dublin in pre-season with Rodgers, him saying he's going to have to apologise. You're thinking, how can he get from that point to this point within a season is absolutely amazing. And that is the story of the season, I think, really. Is how he's done that and how Liverpool have done that, and also Brendan Rodgers and how he's managed that situation. You know, it's been absolutely amazing. Even if they don't win the league, they will finish in the top four. That in itself has been a great achievement, and I think he rightly, you know, should win both awards.
Yeah, it's fascinating, really, isn't it? Because, you know, you think about from a player's point of view, fair to say that he was fairly reviled after the biting incident and everything else that's happened last season. And you know, he seems to have rehabilitated fantastically well, as you say, and he seems to have really got that out of his system. If that was to flare up again before the vote, you would wonder, wouldn't you, how it would affect it, whether his on-the-field magnificence would be shrouded because of more controversy. I mean, he seems a million miles from controversy all of a sudden, doesn't he? Even when he kind of goes over a little bit easy.
I think he's actually going out of his way to sort of steer clear of controversy. You look even, there's been incidents I've watched in games where he's been fouled. There's been penalties not given, which should have been given for him. He's not complained. You know, he's not complained. And if anything, he's actually sort of shied away from the controversy. I think he's just in such a controlled zone of behaviour at the moment. I'd be very surprised if it flares up. Now, they've got these two huge games against Manchester City and Chelsea. There is potential for something happening in those matches, clearly, because if you're... I think Chelsea in particular, they've got to try and stop him. They've got to try and subdue him. So it'll be interesting to see what plan they have to do that. But I think he is in such an environment at the moment where he is so driven. The big danger, and I think Liverpool fans will hate me for saying this, is what happens in the summer, you know, is if especially if they don't win the league, what happens, you know, will somebody come in with some mega offer? There's murmurings of Real Madrid, and it would have to be, I mean, Brendan Rodgers said last week 100 million, it would have to be in excess of 70, 80 million. Probably getting a bit too carried away talking about that, because at the moment all I'm interested in is what happens at the end of the season. I think, you know, Liverpool, personally, I think Liverpool deserve to be champions, and I think he deserves to be player of the year. I mean, the other candidate is quite interesting, is Steven Gerrard himself.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, it is, isn't
there
it?
Is the kind of, you don't want him to get a sympathy vote, because I don't believe in sympathy vote, but, you know, knowing Steven a little bit, he conducts himself brilliantly as a player. I think he is a fantastic role model. I think he's a brilliant captain, and I think one of the indictments of English football in the last decade is why Steven Gerrard hasn't captained the England team until now, really. Because I'd have had him captain. With hindsight, it's a great thing. I know people told me he was shy and everything else, and he wasn't sort of necessarily the most confident player around the England setup.
Do other players look up to Gerrard?
Everyone at the club looks after
him. What about non-Liverpool players? How well is he liked?
Popular. I think he is one of those players who kind of transcends the club boundaries. You know, I know from the England, he runs, I mean, he's very popular. You know, he's very much a player who, but he also knows he is a big player. You know, he commands that respect around the camp, and he is number one at Liverpool, notwithstanding Suarez being there. Everyone's looking to Steven Gerrard. But I think he embraces that quite well, and my understanding is he's very good with the young players. He's taken on this role of elder statesman at Liverpool and with England, and you look at the way he talks now. I mean, he's brilliant with the media. Mm. You know, obviously we deal with him a lot. And just, you know, 10 or 15 minutes talking to Steven Gerrard, you always come away with a sense of what he wants to achieve and what's achievable. He used to have a tendency of beating himself up quite a lot. He was a bit too honest at times. He was quite down on his own form. I think he's gone beyond that now. I think that's partly with age. I think he realises what he can and can't achieve. He said, you know, at the start of the season, he would never win the league with Liverpool. Well, you know, what an amazing turnaround that would be if he wins it this year. And I think there is a sense of mission about Liverpool at the moment. Now, it may all crumble in one game, but, you know, the way the fans reacted at that victory against Tottenham, both pre-match and post-match, there is a real sense of destiny and a real sense of purpose about them. It's going to be hard for them to see off Manchester City, I think, in particular, but it's certainly, you know, six more games, that's all it is now. Mm. It's doable. And I think that will be an extraordinary achievement for Steven Gerrard. The one I feel sorry for in all of this, though, is Jamie Carragher, who, you know, retires at the end of last season. How will he feel if Liverpool win the league in the year after he retired, considering what he contributes to the club as well?
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, finishing off on Suarez, William Hill are betting on whether he'll break the Premier League goals record, which stands at 34. Of course, Andy Cole bagged 34 in one season. For Suarez to score 35 or more is even money. No is 8-11. So no is the slight favourite. Six games left, six goals to get. He's got 29 in 27. On that ratio, Jason, he should do it because he scores more goals than there are games.
Well, I tell you what, they're playing Norwich away, I think, in a couple of weeks.
He needs to get a hat-trick, doesn't he?
He always does get a hat-trick against Norwich.
Is it three already this season, is it?
He always scores a hat-trick against Norwich.
Yeah, he does.
So I think that you're probably thinking, I can get three there for a start.
The thing is, you know, some players, you kind of think, you know, some players will say, oh, I don't really have records in my mind. That's a lie. I think all players have these kind of... I think Suarez is the sort of guy who would have that record in his mind. West Ham away, Norwich away, Crystal Palace away, and Newcastle at home. Obviously, the other two home games are the Chelsea and Man City games, you know, because obviously he could get a goal in those, but it's doable, isn't it? I mean, West Ham, Norwich and Palace away, he could get a couple in each of those games.
I think that's the thing with him, is it's not just, you look at it and think, well, actually it will be quite tight and quite difficult, and maybe he won't do it, but he is just as liable to score four in one match.
Yes.
You know, he's as liable to get four against Norwich or Newcastle. So you can just do that. You can go on that sort of streak in one game. And there will be four extraordinary goals as well. And he has that selfish streak about him still. I mean, even though he's been a brilliant team player, I mean, he does want to score goals. You can see it in his eye. I mean, it's almost like if Daniel Sturridge scores, he has to score as well. You know, he cannot be in a game where there's, you know, Liverpool are winning 3-0 or 4-0 and he hasn't got one of the goals. And that's the mark of a real, you know, hungry striker who's desperate to do well. I suspect it. I think if Liverpool win the league, he will have done it. You know, he will have got the goals to have got them there. He will do it. I suspect he will get those goals. I don't know, in saying that, whether Liverpool will definitely win the league, but I think he will get the goals, because I think he will score a hat-trick between now and the end of the season, and I think that's what will get him over the line.
Let's have a look forward to the Premier League weekend. The TV games starts with 12:45, Man City versus Southampton. Southampton have been on a nice little bit of form with those England hopefuls, doing everything they can to get on that plane to Brazil. The evening game, which Jason will be at, is Chelsea versus Stoke. Another intriguing one, with Stoke's upturn in form and their safety, and Chelsea's Champions League troubles. Then on Sunday, Everton-Arsenal, which is a massive game for fourth place. West Ham versus Liverpool is the 4 o'clock game. And then on Monday night, Tottenham versus Sunderland. Another big one for two different reasons. In between all that, on 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon, Hull-Swansea, Aston Villa-Fulham, Cardiff-Crystal Palace, Norwich-West Brom and Newcastle United versus Manchester United. There are some intriguing games there for lots and lots of different reasons, Jason. Is there any one that stands out for you? Is it the one that you're going to be at, the Chelsea-Stoke game?
No, I mean, I think the one that stands out is Everton-Arsenal, really. I mean, I think that is really set up superbly. You know, I suspect Arsenal will finish fourth. I think they will just about do it. I think that draw against Manchester City last Saturday was a massively important point for them, not just for the point, but just gives them a little bit of breathing space ahead of Everton, but because it just arrested a slide, really, because it was going one way. I was at that game, and you could sense at half-time the trepidation, the sense that, you know, they might be really struggling to sort of save their season almost. So I think that point was big. But then you turn around and look at Everton and this sort of mission they are on. They didn't play particularly well first half against Fulham, but then they win the game 3-1. And I think they are got a real sense of purpose about them with Roberto Martinez. And, you know, if they beat Everton on Sunday, which I think they probably will, and then I think it's going to be game on for them to actually try and finish in that top four. I think Everton will just about hold them off, but it's going to be a real fight until the end of the season. And you sense Everton's Arsenal's nervousness now, that they can see Everton over their shoulder. Yeah. You know, and we could be in an extraordinary situation of having neither Manchester United nor Arsenal in the Champions League next season, having been the two clubs that have always been in the Champions League, basically, to not then be in it. But, I mean, there's some fantastic fixtures this weekend, and what's really, really good, and it's a real sort of compliment to the Premier League, is you go through that list of fixtures and you think there isn't one game where there's nothing to play for. I mean, in some ways, bizarrely, the nearest one is Newcastle-Manchester United. You know, every other game, there is so much at stake in all of those games, either a team fighting for its life or a team trying to sort of get into that top four or win the league. And to be so alive at this stage of the season at top and bottom is a real compliment to the league when you look around Europe, and obviously lots of leagues are done and dusted by now.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, it's been probably the best one I can remember for a long time, and we've still got half a dozen games or more left as well. Just incidentally, on the Everton-Arsenal, you can bet on who will finish in the top four. Everton are 11-4 and Arsenal are 1-4, so Arsenal the overwhelming favourites at the minute. But remember, Everton, if they were to win with that game in hand, it would be in their hands. Everton's running after this Arsenal game. They go to Sunderland, then they're at home to Crystal Palace and Manchester United. They're away at Southampton, home to Manchester City, and away at Hull. Arsenal have got this game, then they've got the FA Cup match against Wigan, of course. Then they have West Ham at home, Hull away, Newcastle at home, West Brom at home, and Norwich away. So Arsenal have got the easier running, you would say, there. Notwithstanding, they've got the FA Cup to contend with along the way. We usually ask for a bet of the week, Jason, at this stage. What is there one result that stands out to you this weekend in the Premier League?
I suspect Stoke might get a draw at Chelsea.
Really? Right.
Yeah. I think they could. I think Chelsea are wobbling here. Mm-hmm. And I think Stoke are playing really, really well. There's a real sense of confidence about them. The only danger for Stoke is, will they step off, because they're basically safe now, aren't they? They've got to that. I think they've got to 40 points.
Is it not the... I mean, if you think about being a player, though, going to Stamford, it's not the sort of game that where you would step off, is it? You know,
no,
you'd be up for it, wouldn't you?
I don't think Mark Hughes will let them.
No,
either.
Especially with his connections.
I think Mark Hughes has got them in a situation now where he's taken a lot of flack this season. A lot of people questioning why he got the job. A lot of people ridiculing him for what's happened in the past. I've always been a big fan of Mark Hughes. I think he's a very good manager. I think he organises his team very, very well, and he'll get them playing. And I think it was a very shrewd appointment by Stoke, because it wasn't a whole gear change from Tony Pulis, but it was definitely an improvement in terms of the football. In saying that, I do admire Pulis and the job he's doing at Palace in particular. But I just think you're absolutely right. He will want to go to Stamford Bridge and get something, and he will sense he can get something. And he really, really will. He'll go there thinking, look, we can at least get a draw here and possibly even back. You've got to remember they beat Chelsea already this season, you know, at the Britannia. And I think it's a very dangerous fixture for Chelsea. On paper, you'd look at it and think it's actually not a bad game for Chelsea. They should win that reasonably comfortably. But I just think Chelsea are a little bit in a difficult situation at the moment. I think they've lost three of the last four. It's not the happiest of sense around the place to me. And I just think Stoke might get something.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, they're away for castigated for their away form, Stoke, but since being beaten 3-0 at Tottenham and 5-1 at Newcastle, they've lost a few. They lost to Palace, Chelsea and Sunderland, but all by a goal to nil. Drew at Southampton, which doesn't look a bad result at the moment. Then only lost by a single goal at Manchester City, remember? It was a late one as well, late-ish. Drew at Norwich, then the really good win against Aston Villa. So it's not like they're being pummeled by anyone. You could quite see them at least holding Chelsea for quite a while. 9-2 the draw, so 4.5-1 for anyone out there who fancies that. It's a decent price, really. Very nice.
Yep.
Jason, I've kept you for much longer than I said I would. So thanks very much. Could chat all day about football. Thank you for your time, Jason. Really appreciate it.
That's great. No problem.
Jason Burt from the Sunday Telegraph. If you want to follow Jason on Twitter, it's at JBurtTelegraph. Quite a few people already do follow him. So if you want to join in the chat on Twitter, you're more than welcome. You can listen to this podcast at footballwriters.co.uk, where you'll find out lots of other information about the FWA at williamhill.com/podcasts on Audioboo. And you can subscribe via iTunes. If you're having a bet on any of the markets that we've discussed today, then very best of luck.